Hey everyone, sorry for the delay. Guess a few other folks were waiting on.
Hello, everyone.
Hey, Alexi.
Hello.
Right. How about we go ahead and get started? I'll just share my screen so we can just see what the agenda looks like. And all right. So, does anyone have any announcements before we hand it off to Alexi? Okay. I don't have any announcements. I guess we'll just hand it off to Alexi to talk about the Cypress test maintenance. So, Alexi, the floor is yours.
Okay. All right, so give me one second. I will start sharing my screen. Okay, claiming the host. Okay, so share. Okay, let's share whole screen. It will be more handy here. Okay, so first of all, right, so we decided to back to our practice okay, let me backtrack. So on previous year, right, so I guess most of product owners who works with EBSCO and EPAM are aware that we started some kind of initiative related to shift left activities, yeah, so shift left testing activities. And on previous year, we introduced some actions that probably were driven by our UI engineers, by front-end developers. And what has been done there, right? So we introduced E2E test maintenance channel. Yeah, so on previous year, Tatiana drove this activities, yeah. So and here what we've got, but by some reason that in Ramsen and Sunflower, we mostly were overwhelmed by feature development work. These end-to-end testing activities were paused by our UI engineers, and right now I am talking about Mark Wexler, Yogesh Kumar, and Lee Borginski, who are our key stakeholders from technology track. Yeah, so we decided to back to this initiative because it shows excellent results in previous year, right? So and right now I'm back to ask our UI developers to troubleshoot test. What does it mean, right? So because we are running our quality gate, I mean some set of UI tests. It's around 270 tests. All right, so for every 3 hours, almost every 3 hours, only exception when we do not have changes, and in this case we will have such notification. Yeah, so apply and abort it by no changes. Yeah, but regularly, if you got some changes, pipeline is executed, environment for such test is rebuilt from scratch, and then we run all this set of Cypress tests, something kind, smoke test unit. And after that, right, so I'm asking people, yeah, we've got a report portal, yeah, this tool set, yeah, so is used to main to like to triage the tests, right? So, and this portal licensed together all our existing tests, right? So for Cypress, for Karate, and right now UI developers are responsible for troubleshooting of quality gate tests, right? So we've got some dashboard. So yeah, we've got excellent example. Yeah, here right now today, yesterday's changes has been triaged fully. Yeah, so we do not have any tests that need to be triaged. So no test in on to investigate status. Yeah, and everything has been reviewed. So I'm trying to explain you this case, this situation that it requires some capacity from UI developers. It's not always that day-to-day tests will be broken, but from time to time when changes are introduced, it can be functional changes, right? So like here that a new code has been developed and tests are not actual right now. In this case, UI developer need to go and adjust its scenarios, work with manual key engineers. We've got flaky tests, right? So it can be like today it's passed and on previous days failed. And yeah, so we expect that it will be passed next time. So in such case, it's triaged as flaky. So it can be product bug, right? So, and like this one, and we linking defects, yeah, to make sure it will be clear what's the source of this failure. Okay, oops. Yeah, so just to give some understanding, right? So to everyone, that person who is triaging defects is aware about the root cause and how it looks like. Yeah, so it can be automation bug, right? So when some framework changes are required. Yeah, so and yeah, so here we've got different type of failures: functional defect, automation, flaky. It can be system issue if something wrong with environment, or not a defect if by some reason this case has failed. Yeah, so I'm trying to explain this just to make sure that you understand what's the source of and what's the area of responsibilities for UI engineers, right? So it's just additional ask. Yeah, so by this activity, we expect that it will free some time for automation QA team, yeah, to make sure that we can add more and new tests, because unfortunately, right now, our manual regression workload is like tremendous, right? So, and by implying this small initiative, we want to back some time to automation QA to make sure that they can produce more automated test cases. So that's it from my side for now. If you have any questions, yeah, feel free to ask. Okay, let me stop share. Oops, share my screen.
So Alexei, so essentially the front end developer will look at this dashboard, or will they receive an alert that?
They yeah. So yeah. All UI developers right now are part of an E2E test maintenance Slack channel. Yeah. So and I'm driving this initiative right now. I'm reviewing new failures, and if something is not triaged, I'm pinging UI developers. I hope in near future we can like add more automation, right? So to make sure that if something is not triaged, particular development team or UI developer will be pinged. Yeah, right now it's on my side. Yeah, so I'm pinging directly in Slack channel each UI developers who are responsible for some set of functionality. Let's say if some Spitfire test has failed, I will ping Denis Bogdan. If test is failed from Vega side, I will ping Dima Litvinenko. If it's from data import side, I will ping Maria, and etc.
Okay, and then they'll try to address the issue, and if it turns out it's rather significant, then they create a Jira to track.
They create, they need to create Jira in any case. Yeah, so, and I expect that failures from quality gates should be fixed as soon as possible, right? So not to defer it into some nearest future, into some future, but it's better to fix it right now. Yeah, if possible today, if not possible, maybe defer by 1 or 2 days, but not put it into the backlog because, you know, it's quality gate. Yeah, so what is showing for us that we've got a problems if something is failed. Yeah, so it means that this particular test doesn't work. Yeah, so it has failed on this step and is not showing for us what else is happened, right? So maybe some minor failure can cover some significant problem. So that's why I'm asking fix the defects which are detected during a quality gate execution as soon as possible. Sooner rather than later.
Okay. Thanks, Alexei. Does anybody else have any questions or thoughts to share with Alexei?
Is there a plan to replace the Karate test with Cypress test, or they will?
Nope. Nope. It's a different like part of quality pyramid, right? So or quality conus, how it looks like. But they so karate test still is mandatory to be written, right? So and we've got right now tests which are executed nightly. So and we are working with Erica team how to improve entitlement process to make sure that we can run tests in parallel, I mean karate tests. That's why we excluded them from quality gate for now, but I hope it will back to quality gate soon.
Great, thank you.
Yeah, because Cypress test is our like how to say top of our iceberg testing, right? So what we can see right now as some UI flows, UI scenarios, but under the hood we've got integration tests like Karate tests, backend integration tests, also UI integration tests as Jest and RTL tests, right? So, and below we've got also huge, huge set of unit tests for backend and for UI as well. So all these pyramids, all this part of our pyramid is essential, right? So and we should not skip. Yeah. So yeah. So in lower level, we've got more tests than on the high level. All right, guys. Before I drop off, I just want to remind you. I posted a message to Product Owners channel today related to preparation of release digest for Sunflower. I know that some teams already working on it, right? So yeah, but I can see people from Index Data, Charlotte, or from Knowledge Integration. Okay, maybe I ping later offline them. Charlotte and oh, my bad. And Owen, yeah. Yeah, but yeah, please, we've got a helping hand from EPAM, Andrei Gamolin, who can help with recording of video materials. Yeah, if you need, you can reach out to him. Yeah, so it's I guess it's expected, right? So and my goal right now, short-term goal, to complete release digest up to the end of June. We'll see how things pan out with it. Yeah, so but I know that we've got almost all data which we can use as part of release digest preparation for Sunflower. Yeah, so let's combine everything together and share with our end users.
Thank you, Alexei. Francesca and Martina, Are you both familiar with the release digest?
If no, I
Oh,
can.
so, oh, sorry. I needed to activate the microphone first.
No problem.
Not totally, so since I'm still quite new. I think yeah, that's the first release I'm really actively in already part on. So and I didn't had a closer look on the former ones yet. So I definitely have to check on that one.
Okay, yeah, Halila, if you don't mind, I can share like current work, what we're working on preparation for Sunflower. Maybe it will give some grasp to newcomers about this initiative.
Yeah, if you could, do a like a quick minute overview. Martina, what were you going to say?
Yes, I'm familiar a little bit, but since this will be my first, so every help is welcome. Thanks.
Okay, give me a second, please. Okay. Okay, I can't find it. Okay. All right. I hope you can see it, right? So what does it mean, release digest? So we are trying to collect all valuable information for end users for a past release. In current case, it's Sunflower. So first, yeah, so it's just regular content, right? So with some part of it. By first part of slides deck, we're gonna to present effort, right? So who did what, in what value, how many tickets has been introduced for this particular release, what like functional areas, application areas were developed. It's just overview, right? So just to make sure that people who will review introduction of release digest will decide what they're gonna to review, right? So because after that we will follow some team presentations. Yeah, so then we'll also give some kind of statistic information regarding number of features, their separation between functional and non-functional, because as part of each release we're doing not only new features as functional representation, but also we're doing a lot of non-functional work related to like end-to-end test building, related to some representation of technical requirements, et cetera. Yeah, so after that, so here is just statistics of Bugfest. Yeah, how does it come? How many tests in what buckets were executed. Yeah, so because we are doing like a lot of job here, area of testing. Also, yeah, it's just a representation of who did and how much, right? So how much test cases were executed as part of all this stuff, how many tests were executed by EPAM QAs and by our community volunteers. Yeah, so and after that, just overall statistics of Bugfest findings. Yeah, and yeah, so for different parts. And at last, it's just statistical information from release to release related to quality, related to defects count, which were detected during release cycle, which were detected during Bugfest cycle, and some kind of coefficient, what I'm calculating is just, yeah, it just gives some kind of overview of quality. Yeah, so and after that, each team represents their scope that they did for this release. So here is example of Thunderjet, right? So just overview what were included, and then just some info about features, right? So we just tried to give some grasp what problem has been resolved, or what was in scope, in what particular modules changes were applied, how many tickets were delivered. Yeah, and it's just brief overview, and after that it's usually video material which is recorded to give understanding of how does this feature work. Yeah, so and we just repeat this approach for each team, right? So and each team who represented functional changes just want to share their findings. Yeah, and at the end, so first we just bring some highlights related to future work, right? So what can be delivered as part of next release, as planned features and changes in some functional areas. So a list of useful links here. Yeah, and also like what modules were released and in what components. So it's just, I guess it should give some clear picture to end users related to these changes, because in the past we've got system demos, but then we decided to skip them. Yeah, so I guess by this initiative it will give some picture, a clear picture for end users about new features. Yeah, that's probably it.
Thank you, Alexei. Does anybody have any questions for Alexei before he heads off the call? Alexei, I don't know if you can change someone to be host just to make sure we don't end up ending the call when you leave, but
Okay, let me try to do it. Okay. Okay, make a host. Yes.
All right,
Okay, Halila,
perfect.
you are your host right now.
All right, okay, cool. Thank you, Alexi.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you,
And
everyone. See you later.
thank you. Bye. All right, next up is Joe and Amelia to talk about proposed Eureka enhancements. So, Joe and Amelia, take it away.
Amelia, do you want to share your screen or do you want me to share mine?
I think if you could share your screen, that'd be good. I'm down to one screen today.
All right. Okay, so yeah, Amelia and I were tasked basically with looking over the current state of Eureka roles and just the whole how that works from a user usability experience. And I'll just show you our starting points, then I'll hand things over to Amelia to just to talk about our findings. But basically went through into the settings app, into the role creation, and took screenshots and marked everything up. And if you've worked with roles, you'll see that it's pretty big. So we started with the whole selecting an application. So you click select application and this pops up. And then as we zoom out, it just gets to more and more and more information with lots and lots and lots of stuff. So it gets very overwhelming very quickly. And basically, we were trying to tame this beast while also balancing the need for a high degree of granularity, because people want to need very granular control, but at the same time, sometimes you just gotta set up a user real quick so they can do their jobs and you don't want to spend 45 minutes defining it. So how do we come to that balance? As we mentioned, we just went through and made a number of observations, and some of it is, questions we have. What does this mean? Does this verbiage make sense? Talking about how we can do things, a few notes on what the behavior is like, and just generally how can we do this? And we actually came up with a list of action items and a couple of proposals about how we could potentially tame this. So I'll, Amelia, if you want to step in and talk about what we've actually discovered and recommended.
Yeah, sure. So we've got this box here with some of our action items. And we've kind of split them up into P1, P2, P3, priority, maybe not necessarily the rank that these features would get in Jira, but kind of the idea of what we think is most important to change. So first, being able to view which capabilities are contained within a capability set. This we didn't settle on a way that we would want to implement this, but we were looking at in the finance app. There's currently this is also a draft feature to allow for a hierarchical display of fiscal years and ledgers in the finance app. And we were thinking that something similar where you could expand a line with the capability set and see the capabilities it includes right there in the list. So this we don't have a super firm idea on how we would implement this. But this is what we were looking at. The next thing that we were talking about was the search and filter for on resource name. So currently, the only real way to find a specific capability set that you're looking for is to know how the name of that capability set, how that name is formatted, and to control F on the page. So we were thinking that it would be really great if we could have a search pane, similar to how we have in other apps. And so we were talking about what we might want to include in that. And one of the things that came up was we would want a multi-select for application. So instead of selecting application at the top of the role creation edit page, by default, nothing would show. And then you would select applications to include in your search, and it will populate the lists the way it does now when you select an application. Another thing that we talked about was a UI-only facet. So there are a lot of our capability sets that start with the UI prefix. And from what we were looking through, most of these are the capability sets that you would want to be assigning to a staff user. These are the things that let them access different apps and make changes to various records. And most of the non-UI capability sets are either about storage modules or about specific endpoint permissioning. So we wanted a way to separate out these UI capability sets from everything else, since that's probably going to be the primary thing that folks are looking for when they're putting together a role. And then finally, we were talking about an assigned, unassigned facet, just for ease of use there. So then Are there any questions about those ones? I see. Yeah, application tag in the search as well. Yeah.
So, Tom, speaking to your comment, that it would be helpful if the application tag equals the menu name in the Folio UI. To an extent, yes, but to other extents, that there's some nuance in there that would make things more complicated. For instance, in app acquisitions, the app acquisitions controls orders, receiving, and finance, and I think organizations. So it doesn't exactly correspond. We don't want to create four separate applications for that, but they're all kind of lumped together. So, I mean, it's good feedback, but it does present certain challenges in terms of what we consider a functional area versus what's displayed in the UI.
And that makes sense. And I mean, I think acquisitions, since it does encompass multiple app spaces, some of those groupings make sense. But I also know from playing around in here that there's, was it, app core capabilities that just seems to encompass a ton of different areas. And that's the one that I'd like to see possibly broken up a little bit more.
Yeah, and that is a work in progress. I think eventually App Platform Complete will probably dissolve into smaller apps, but we are still kind of feeling our way through. But that is definitely good feedback because it should be clear with the app what functional area you're working in.
I think this also gets into a little bit with the, I think there was a product owners channel thread that Owen started about the terminology. We have the apps that are in the dropdown. We have applications that, you know, we now are have to choose in order to select the capability or capability set. And then, you know, and you know, so I think this also gets into to that too, how we can how with Eureka platform, maybe some terminology, we have some terminology updates to help that we need to consider or think about to help minimize confusion.
Yeah, I think that's a great idea. And there are a couple of roles focused bits of terminology that we were also going to recommend changing. And actually, that's the next thing on our list. So this is where we move into the P2, the maybe less of a high priority enhancements. So first, like we were just saying, names and labels. We want things to be more descriptive. And we also talked about using the I information icon next to the sections, so the data settings and procedural sections. Having those have a little I icon that gives some more clarity on what that category actually entails. And then we also talked about renaming those categories. So the data and procedural are not very intuitive from all the feedback I've heard from folks. There's a lot of confusion about what data means, what procedural really means. So when we last talked about this, I believe we were suggesting that we would rename data to records because that's really what those capability sets are talking about, is the ability to access or modify records. And then for procedural, I think procedural is a little more clear, but actions was what we were suggesting to be even more clear. Since that matches up with many of the capability sets under actions, are directly enabling an action menu option. And so actions seems a lot more intuitive for that. But yeah, I'm sure there's a lot more terminology that we could talk about changing. And maybe that it's a larger conversation. And then just display selected applications. So this would be a change to the view screen for a role. So right now, the view screen shows the capability sets and the capabilities assigned to the role, but not which applications those capability sets and capabilities are coming from. So we want to add that to the view pane. And then because we'd be removing the select application button when we add the search functionality, we're thinking that we would leave that alone in the edit screen and just use the filters as the way to set which applications are being used for the role. So those are our P2 issues. And then for P3, these are a little more simple. So one of them is at the very bottom of this roles edit screen, there's a footnote that has asterisks indicating policies that there are policies set for a particular action. But the asterisk is also being used on the page to indicate when a field is required. So just for better clarity, we should probably replace whatever indicator we use there. I think we were talking about either the red alert icon, having that show in the row where that capability set or where the capability or capability set is in that line, instead of using this asterisk. And then, of course, documentation is important. I think a lot of good documentation has been started, but we're going to absolutely need more. And then the last thing is another small change. And this kind of goes to reducing the amount of overwhelming amount of data being shown to have the capability accordion collapse by default. So only the capability sets are shown. And that way we can present capabilities as this more granular option for when you can't find what you need in the capability sets. Tom, yeah.
Sorry, I like causing issues. there's one part of the UI that I'm not sure how I feel about it. I did want to kind of throw it out there and see what other people thought is when you select a capability set, it automatically selects and then disables the individual capabilities. I don't know if I like it or not, and that's a problem. At some point in time, I can see it being useful, but it also seems like a duplication of data and also can be confusing because if you look at the summary screens, it looks like you double selected things when you did, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I think maybe how we change that would depend on how we implement viewing the sub capabilities in a capability set. I think, well, one thing that we had talked about was potentially instead of having capability sets and capabilities separated into two accordions, maybe having separate searches for those instead. But yeah, I think I see folks talking in the chat that we should talk with Kimmy about this, and I totally agree. I think she'll have great suggestions on how to make all of these things that we want work together.
Yeah, I just want to say that the analysis that Joe and Amelia did is great, and we should talk about what they've outlined, see if there's anything else we think should be here, whether other things be prioritized. But the plan has always been that there are a few things here that I don't necessarily think we need Kimmy. I think Kimmy would say yes, just do it, like, adding an info tip, things like that. But there's definitely things that are being proposed that we plan to talk with Kimmy and Craig about. Craig is the PO for Eureka, and have them work to get have them work on and on making improvements that are they're not just simple, adding an info tip somewhere, or maybe changing a label. But yeah, the things that are more complex definitely will include Kimmy needs to be involved. So as you guys were talking, one thought I had was maybe, and this would be something, and maybe this was documented, I don't think it was, but maybe with the capability sets and capability, maybe it's a toggle. You choose which one you want to use, because I do find it confusing, that you got the, sometimes I'm almost inclined to click on some capabilities when I realize, well, actually, I don't need to, because, I got my capability sets. And so I do wonder if that is a some other way to kind of minimize some of all the data density, to in order to just have a toggle to choose which one you want to use to set up your roles. But anyway, just a thought as you guys were talking. I'm going to go back on mute and let others talk.
Since it's quiet, I'll talk instead of typing. To kind of piggyback on what you were saying, it is, I think the only time that I'll probably dive into individual capabilities is when I'm setting up permissions for machine accounts and outside scripts where I want to have a lot more control over what they can access and do. I think for general user roles, I'll probably be using mostly and have been using mostly capability sets.
Yeah, and I think that's true for most folks. The capability sets are most of what anyone will need.
I'm curious about folks' experiences that, because for the first time with Sunflower, many of us set up roles. Least I hope we all did. And I'm just curious what you guys experienced in setting up the roles. Was it, oh, I got it, it was quick, it was easy, awesome, great? Or was it like, I'm not really sure what I'm supposed to do? I'm just curious, what was that experience like setting up roles for the first time when you were testing on Sunflower Bug Fest?
For the first time, I had no idea what I was doing. And after doing it a few times, I still feel like I have trouble explaining what I'm doing. And sometimes it feels like I'm just trial and error, erroring it. Like, did I choose the right ones? Let's log into that user and see, kind of thing.
Yeah, I'll second that. I mean, we were kind of lucky. We got a version of Eureka back on, I think it was Q. So I had exposure to setting up rules in there, and I created a few external tools to see what the individual capabilities were underneath the capability sets. And we do have a current environment with Sunflower Eureka where I'm actually setting up all the rules, but it does, like, it took a while for me to get used to it. Once I got used to it, I got a flow. I have run into some issues where I've noticed, like, I'm creating like 20 or 30 rules, and if you create one right after another one, the UI seems to slow down, which I'm not sure why. It's still not kind of clear what you're selecting. Even with like my own breakout document, like sometimes it's the same thing as Christine said, like I'm creating a role and then I have another user account that I assign that role to and log in and see if it does what I want it to do. If not, I go back and tweak and go back and forth and back and forth. So yeah, there's some things where you feel like, oh yeah, I know how to do this. And other things is just kind of like, did I do that right?
That's no. Thanks, Christine and Tom, for sharing those experiences. I mean, if you guys have seen the action items here, you have some other ideas too. And Amelia, Joe, sorry for swooping in here, but just curious, what would help make this easier, or what's one or two things that you think would make it clear what you're selecting, make sure you're doing the right, you've done the right thing. If you look at the action items that are on this list, or you just have a general, you have an idea or a suggestion, what are one or two things you guys think would definitely be helpful to knowing what you select, knowing what to select and knowing what you selected was right.
My perspective, the two things that would make the most immediate difference are that hierarchical view and some cleaned up names and labels for things. From what I've heard, the split into the three categories has been, I think, the most confusing part for a lot of folks, just not knowing which section to look under for which kinds of actions, what kind of permissions. So I think that, and I think just such a super easy thing that would minimize confusion would be collapsing the capabilities accordion by default. Since the only way we have to search right now is with Control F, a lot of the time I end up landing on a capability when I'm looking for the full set. And it takes extra time when that's expanded by default.
I think it's also important that we have reference capability sets, like, or reference roles, I should say, that we know work with core common things that you need to do. So if you are a circulation supervisor, that you can do all of those common circulation things that you need to do. And as we add new functionality and new add new features, new functionality to Folio, we need to make sure that those reference roles are updated to include the newest functionality, just because as long as you know that Folio ships with somebody that's set up where this is confirmed working, you're never at a complete dead end. So, the API users I get can really become a bit of a, yeah, that can become a bit of a sticky wicket. And there comes a point with this level of granularity where you're going to run into trial and error. But especially with user roles, you don't want anybody kind of stuck. So having a reference that you can look at and say, okay, I know this works. What exactly do they have? And then work from there. At least you've got something to start with.
Okay. Does anybody else have any thoughts about the work that the analysis that Amelia and Joe conducted around Eureka roles analysis?
This is super helpful. Thank you.
Yeah.
Yes, 100%. Really good work, guys.
Yeah. Did we add, Joe, the reference roles you added here? I know we actually have talked about this in a previous meeting, and I know there's something that I need to do on that, but should we add it here? And I'm just looking at what some other notes I took that was discussed. I think we already have the hierarchical view on there. I think that's already there.
And I shared a link to this Miro board in chat. Everybody, if you have the link, you can comment. So do feel free to log in and post comments, and they will look something like this. So just have a little initial with a comment. But yeah, please do feel free to comment on this and provide your own feedback, and we'll go in and look at those.
Yeah. And Joe and Amelia have shared this with Craig. And I think at this point, it's a matter of, I think there's a couple of stories that I can, or maybe one of us can write, and I'm sure there will be no problem with Kimmy or with the Eureka team with crossing our fingers getting done. But obviously there are some areas in which we need Craig and Kimmy to align and agree on, and need for them to plan to do in upcoming releases. Okay, but does he have some for some of the findings that you have here, Joe? I think we just need to verify that, unless you already know.
Yeah, when we met with him, he had some immediate action items that he was going to work on for the Trillium release.
Okay,
I think we need to circle back with him and verify that. But I remember those were his takeaways. Was he grabbed a couple of these? It was the lower hanging fruit, just because there's so much other Eureka work that needs to be done. But yeah, he's already grabbed a couple of these. Like, I think he's gonna go ahead and collapse the accordions and do some of the just the verbiage changes.
Oh, great.
I think he's grabbed some of those. The big search filter, that will probably come later. Mm-hmm. But he's said he's going to get to the low-hanging fruit. But we can verify that with him.
Great. And I think there's some areas where we could, you know, he can obviously work with Kimmy, or maybe we can help him. Like, for example, maybe a better term than procedural, because every time I see that, I think of Law and Order. Maybe we can help him with that. Or if anybody has any suggestions, you know, feel free to send them along to Craig. Thanks, Joe. And thanks, Amelia. We don't have that much time left, and that's fine, because I didn't have much of an update with regard to the next item, which is related to what we discussed last week, which was bug fest to be or not to be. I'll share my screen real quick, and it we'll end on time. At least I'll try to end on time. I don't know if anybody else has any thoughts or after that meeting. For me, I do have a few thoughts after the meeting, but before I share those, I just want to see if anybody else has any thoughts or insights after that meeting. And Joe, the floor is yours.
So this is just a quick thought, but I know we are now doing more and more UATs and formalizing UATs increasingly into our, just as part of our development cycle and our definition of done and all that. And I think the UATs serve some of the practical purpose of Bugfest in the sense of letting the user community test new development to make sure it works. And we're testing it earlier to make sure that it works and meets needs when we can actually fix things that don't work exactly right. So to my mind, the real use case for Bugfest is more smoke testing and regression, which is it's important, but I think UATs can the uptake of UATs can reduce the importance of Bugfest and can potentially reduce the scope of Bugfest, at least to my mind. I could be wrong, but at least it changes what it is and how we do it, to my mind.
All right, I see some feedback from folks. I agree, UATs are really important, and we should try to do that as well. One thought I had is, Dennis, floor is yours.
Now I'm wondering what thought you were having. Yeah, I just wanted to kind of comment. So I definitely agree. I think having UATs is really helpful. But we were talking, I think, last meeting that Bugfest seems to be sort of in between serving two purposes now. Like, it's part of our release hardening process. And because of that, a lot of the activity that's done there is done by QAs. I think that's enormously valuable, but also increasingly maybe unrealistic as like the number of tests just continues to grow. When the second part of it is verification of functionality by current, you know, users, libraries that have production environments. And like in products that I've worked on in the past, there were at least a collection of customers that had UAT environments, which, you know, depending on who's hosting your institution, I guess that's going to differ. And there's obviously a cost associated with having an extra environment. But whether it's like a dev or a UAT environment or a staging environment, like an environment where you basically have your data that is not production that can run the upcoming version of the software, and having, you know, beta environments like that, or whatever they would be called, where users would actually test the upcoming release in advance of their upgrade, like formalizing that involvement might help streamline Bugfest a little bit more, like removing the ambiguity of, is this really a place where QAs are testing, or is it a place where community is testing, or are both of those groups working together on the same stories or overlapping, or trying to clarify that this is the part that is just QAs, the environment where these QAs are working, and they're only going to find certain things. And then these are maybe their 10 libraries or something that agree to participate in the beta. And those libraries are responsible for testing, and they are provisioned with staging or bug fest environments for that purpose. And they have a set period of time to do that testing for new functionality. It just seems like maybe time to sort of adjust the structure here. Anyway, I'm thinking out loud, but those are my thoughts.
Oh, it's good. We're a bit over, but those are good. And I think my takeaway from from what we have been talking about is that we do. I think we're all in agreement. We need to reframe Bugfest, and I think there is a way to reframe to frame it as a hardening period for DevOps and QA and our teams, but maybe it's less looking at those test cases and more of here's an environment we need you to test, functionality, new functionality. So I have a few thoughts, and maybe it's now options now listening to what others have said, and maybe not the next meeting, but maybe the meeting after next, we can talk more about those options and what folks think and how we might want to present that to Alexei and Yogesh and other folks. Or maybe it's a WolfCon session, as Tom had brought up before. But with that, I'm going to let people be since we're a little bit over time, because we're going to continue this conversation. It's not going to end after if we add another minute here. But thanks, Amelia. Thanks, Joe. For your insights and sharing them. And we'll talk over Slack or Teams, and then we'll have another meeting in 2 weeks. So thanks, everybody. Have a great rest of your day.
Thanks all.
Sure.
Thanks. Bye,
Bye.
Everyone.
Thanks, everyone.